President Bush announced George Tenet's resignation today as he left Washington, D.C. on a trip to Italy and France to mark the 60th anniversary of the liberation of Rome and the Allied landings in Normandy, two turning points of the Second World War. 60 years ago today, Frank Walk was in southern England, soon to be part of the greatest armada and then the greatest amphibious assault in history. Captain Frank Walk was a combat engineer. Plans called for him and his men to remove the obstacles and mines and barbed wire that the Germans littered across Omaha Beach and clear the way inland. Very little went according to plan that morning, though, as Frank Walk played his part in the bloodiest and most dangerous part of D-Day. Frank Walk joins us now on the phone from New Orleans, and thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
60 years ago, just before you got aboard the ship, what were you doing?
Well, just prior to that, we had been in tent camps called staging areas in south-east part of England, and just anticipating that we would be called to board our ships. In my case, I was going to board an LST for the crossing of the Channel, and so we were anticipating that. Actually, I had been called upon pretty late on this particular day to make a run, a courier, special courier run of some top secret bigoted things from my commanding general to General Eisenhower. So I took a very fast, rough jeep ride kind of across country to go to Eisenhower's headquarters at Southwick House. And of course, that was a pretty hairy deal, and but all the time I was afraid that I wasn't going to get back to our staging area in time to board the ship for the crossing. Later, I wished I had.
Well, you then had a very rough ride on that LST across the English Channel.
Indeed, it was quite rough, and of course, it turned out to be 24 hours longer than we had anticipated because we had first. Thought that we were going to be landing on the 5th and not on the 6th.
Now, what was the scene like? You got about, 12 miles offshore on that LST and then transferred into a smaller boat, a Higgins boat. And what was it like when you actually got to the shore?
Well, it was very rough. Actually, the whole crossing of the channel was rough on the LST. And then when we got about, as you said, about 10, 12 miles offshore, The LST sort of rendezvoused at that point, along with others, and those of us who were going ashore went over the side of the LST on climbing down on cargo nets into the LCVPs, which was a 36-foot wooden landing craft with a steel ramp on the front of it that was made by Higgins. And there were about 30 of us that climbed into the LST that I was in, and of course the sea was very rough. We had a hard time getting into the boat and the little boat in the first place, and then of course it was bouncing around and with the waves blowing over the sides and everything else, and it wasn't long before all of us aboard that little boat were seasick, and then we began to to say, gee, when can we get to shore? When can we get ashore? Let's get there as quickly as possible. Again, when we got there, we wished we weren't there.
We're speaking with former U.S. Army Captain Frank Walk Sr. about his experiences on D-Day. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. As you say, the Omaha Beach that you found, nothing at all like what you'd planned for.
No, it wasn't. We had been given to understand, and this was, pretty careful briefings that we had for several weeks or more prior to this day, we were told that shown actually aerial photographs of the fortifications and said, these are fortifications which continued to be built under Rommel's directions, and we could see more obstacles and more guns and placements and everything else being built, but all the time our headquarters was telling us, don't worry about that because that's all going to be neutralized. Well, of course the measures that they had in mind to neutralize were, number one, a big aerial bombardment, which actually, due to bad weather, those bombs were dropped about 2 or 3 miles inland instead of on the beach. Then there was going to be naval accurately directed naval gunfire, which did not happen because the directors of those at that gunfire did not get ashore, and they were shot up.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, we were counting two on the DD tanks, so-called, those that had the skirts and were floated, going to be floated in, and they practically all swamped because of the bad weather. So anyway, there were at least three measures that we were told that were going to neutralize the defenses. None of those happened. When I got there, the defenses were in pristine condition.
The first thing you did was dig in.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. I mean, but of course, as the ramp dropped on my LCVP, the coxswain thought that we were hitting the shore. We actually were hitting a sandbar a ways out from the actual shore. And when we went out down the ramp, we actually went into water that, for me, was shoulder height. So for some of the men who were shorter than I was, it was almost over their heads. So we made our way anyhow. And by that time, of course, we had been able to see the chaos that had developed from the earlier landings on the beach. By chaos, I mean dead and dying soldiers, wrecked landing craft, and the like. And we also, of course, were subjected to fire very shortly, small arms fire ourselves. And so some of those who came out of the LCVP with me actually were hit before they got ashore. But when I got to the shore finally, first thing I did was dig a foxhole. And that didn't last very long because the tide was coming in, and pretty soon I was in water again. So I began to crawl then, and as best I could, up to what was called the shale line, which was about 2 feet maybe higher than the sand beach that we first landed on. And that gave us a little cover. Again, I dug another foxhole there and began to try to collect some people around me who I thought might be helpful in doing the job that I was collected to do. And about that time, I managed to find the colonel who was my boss, and he had landed a little earlier. He was no longer capable of functioning. He had been shell shocked and was just.
And so you, at the age of 23, found yourself then assigned to run a big part of the beach. I want to get, we just have about a minute with you left, and I want to get later that day, you were up about noon, I guess, in a captured German fortification called a pillbox, where you overheard what turned out to be the critical moment in terms of the command decisions that were made that day. People considering whether or not what was turning out to be this bloody disaster at Omaha Beach might have to be called off.
Yes, that's right. Of course, we all know since then from history that these discussions, actually did go on. Well, I happened to be privy to that part of it that was going on shore. There were several general officers who were connected by radio to General Bradley, who was offshore, and the discussion was, yes, very frankly, should we, number one, should we abandon the landing and not land any more troops here at all? Number two, should we hold up on the landings until things can be somewhat cleared here on the beach before we land any more people? Well, that discussion may have gone on for 30 minutes or so, but by this time, of course, everybody had some pretty good opinions who were sure about what should be done, and it finally wound up that Bradley agreed that we'd simply hold up the landings for several hours and see if we couldn't get more of the men and equipment cleared off the beach, and then we would resume them later in the day, which we did.
Frank Walk, a eavesdropper and participant in history on Omaha Beach on D-Day. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.